I know more about sports than you, good sir.
Tis to laugh. Dare I say my grandmother could outsport you any day of the week.
Gentlemen, may I borrow your ear for a moment?
But of course!
BetDSI.net is an awesome site where you can play for free and win real cash. Are you a sports nut with a lot of confidence?
Thoroughly.
Maybe you're a casual fan with a flair for the stats.
Guilty!
Put your knowledge to the test and win real cash at BetDSI.net. It's fun, it's entertaining, and it's just another way to enjoy the sport you already love. It's BetDSI.net.
Huzzah!
If Bob didn't say it, then it probably ain't true. This is Primetime Sports with a man who cannot tell a lie. Bob McCown. Primetime Sports. Now, on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Forever. I can wait till the music runs out. We just have dead air. I don't care. It's prime time. We used to be coast to coast on the Sportsnet television network, but apparently we're not anymore. Now we're just on radio. So if you've been watching on television and haven't switched over to radio, you haven't heard a word I've said, which might be good or might not be.
In the World Wide Web, Bob. In the World Wide Web.
Oh, yeah. 50 people listening on there.
No, the podcasters, they will be downloading all night long.
Yeah, but they're not listening now. They'll be listening later, and later I'll be in
and
bed.
And you can't say hello to them?
I'd be premature. They're not listening yet. Have them call me at home.
Oh, don't say that.
John Shannon, Gordon Kirk, Brad Fay around the table. They turned the TV lights off, too. I can hardly see anything. Wow, it's been a long time. Have we covered all the hockey things we need to cover? We covered the draft. Yep. We covered the series. We covered all the stuff. All right, good. It's not necessarily the biggest story. In fact, it's not the biggest story. But let's quickly touch on the NFL draft, which was last night. It was the usual affair from ESPN. A bunch of guys sitting at a podium talking about the picks. Was it just me or the picks come faster than they have in the past? Did they lower the time limit? Or is it still like 8 or 10 minutes?
It felt long to me.
Did it feel long?
Oh, yeah. It felt long to me.
Well, I didn't watch, really. I just kind of flipped on and off. But every time I flipped on, they were making another pick. So it didn't seem like it was the big delay in between. To say there's surprises, if you look at the different draft projections that were out there, there were – everybody was all over the map. In terms of, other than the first two, who's going to pick third, who's going fourth, and all the way down the list. More surprises than usual? I don't know. There was no consensus going into this draft as to who would pick where.
Just the one big one with the tweet preceding it. That became the story. I was going to ask quickly, as an agent representing players, would you tell the likes of Austin Matthews and Kachuk and these guys get off social media when the week the draft?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's too dangerous. Somebody's got an axe to grind somewhere.
Right? Yeah, and you're too vulnerable. I mean, nobody knows how to protect themselves except maybe the CSI.
Yeah.
But other than that, nobody knows how to protect themselves. These kids certainly don't. And that nothing good can come of it. Mm. Nothing. Yeah. It's just get off there.
I think to answer your original question, Bob, when you look at the first two quarterbacks, when you look at Ezekiel Elliott going four to Dallas, and
although there was some speculation about that happening,
right?
Granted,
but even Joey Bosa going third surprised a ton of people. The Ohio State lineman,
he was going to go top
four or five, but three
maybe
to
eight.
San Diego was a bit of a shock.
Yeah. And that's where Denzel was supposed to go, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So and then you go the rest of the draft until, I mean, when you're drafting linemen and you're drafting defensive backs, let's face it, and it, if you're not a hardcore college football guy, how much are you really saying, well, that's a surprise there? But when you even listening to the guys doing the draft at times last night, they were surprised guys going out of order or wide receivers going in different positions than they thought they would. So it really was, other than the first two spots, it was
unclear
all night long.
Yeah. So let me throw this out, and we don't know how these teams ranked these players. Would you have drafted Tunsil after you saw the video? If you thought he was third, fourth best player in the draft, it is clear that that video had some significant impact. Mm-hmm. It scared a lot of guys away.
Oof. Some teams took them right off the board. Like yeah. Baltimore, yeah, just, yeah. Baltimore took eliminate. Him right off the board.
Yeah.
Said, "We're yeah. remove him, take him off the list."
Yeah. Was that enough to scare you?
If full you're disclosure, a GM? I'm from Vancouver, so you know that probably
nothing. Scares
good old
them.
Kid, you know the weed. No, but yeah, I don't. It wouldn't have. I feel like, you know, and it's a completely new argument to open up. But I just feel like if it's marijuana, now you got the problem is you got such little time to do any in depth, you know, investigation into whether or not there's anything else. But I feel like. That's a college thing. Like if somebody was, I think Arash tweeted today, say, thank God there wasn't, you know, camera phones when we were in college. Like you just one thing like that. It's different if he's shooting up or he's doing cocaine or he's doing, you know, that just felt like, again, it's a hard argument because it sounds like, oh, you're condoning the use of drugs, but that wouldn't have.
Well, it's legal in what, three states in the United States or yeah. four states in the United States. Yeah. The prime minister has said it's going to be legal in Canada in the next year or 18 months
and,
or something.
Yeah. And wouldn't the investigation have been done into these guys? Like, well, you that's get what I that. Wondered. It's like, okay, well, we do everything about him. This pops up. It's not like, oh, that is a trend necessarily, that somebody's been saving that to grind him. If it's his father-in-law or a stepfather, whoever who did it, but. I just feel like, yeah, if the investigation was done, that shouldn't scare you like that.
No, it's in a multi-million-dollar business where you're investing the kind of money you are in an athlete and you have time and the opportunity to interview them, do your homework, talk mm-hmm. to other people, talk to their friends. You have, and you perceive that these teams do that kind of investigation. How does this slip through? Mm-hmm. How is this a great shock?
It is. I got to be careful what I say, obviously, because I was in the business for a while. But usually what I saw, and I'm still seeing today, is where I hear something in the ranks among the people as to so-and-so's trouble because almost always it turns out to be at least that and maybe worse. There are teams right now that I know that are having trouble with certain players that had they done a full investigation previously, I think they would have detected it because it was generally known.
Okay, let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Without Johnny Manziel and his story, is the impact of this as big?
Of this particular incident?
Is this guy now with what Manziel turned out to be,
yeah.
what a lot of us thought he was going to yeah. be, what he turned out to be, and the fact that he almost assuredly will never play another game in the National Football
yes.
League. And given all the problems that came afterwards, most of which you heard about. I mean, if Manziel wasn't sitting right in front of them,
right,
would the impact have been the same?
No, probably not. I think now people see these things as not being, oh, a little marijuana, a little this, a little that. They see it as being the tip of the iceberg. If he will do this and that, I suspect he'll also do. That's the conclusions that are being come to. I'm aware of people on teams now that the teams are just beginning to see the tip of the iceberg.
Sure.
Where within the business, within the industry, it's been known among many people for a long time. I won't name teams or whatever, but I read about in the paper, oh, they think they've got a discipline problem with so-and-so. Really? Well, if you only knew what everybody else knows out in the industry, in the business, you wouldn't have anything to do with this player.
Yeah, Tunsil is an interesting one when you consider there were hints of issues before the draft with his he didn't play assaults. Seven games yeah. and the assaults. Yeah. And then when you consider the second tweet about getting money from the coach to help pay his mother's medical bills and her water bill. This was one where...
So it was a combination of things, in your opinion.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally a combination. Now, he was supposed to be the best lineman in the draft, maybe the best raw athlete in the draft, period, to drop to 13. So, and it will now, henceforth, until he becomes an all-pro, be known as the Tunsil draft.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. No, I agree. Although it's cost him, I think somebody said 7.2 if he'd gone three compared to where he went, 7.2 million. So if it's his estranged stepdad that's doing this stuff to get back at him and wants to sue him,
wow,
it's kind of a strange thing. It's costing him more money. Why do you let him get more money and then sue him for more? But, seems, I don't know. It's a weird argument.
Miles Jack is another guy who dropped precipitously right out of the first round. In fact, he was considered a top 10 prospect, the linebacker out of UCLA, who had a knee injury that he did not disclose, that he hid. Again, it's a business. Multi-million dollar contracts are at stake.
Mm-hmm.
Gord, what's the obligation of the player to disclose his health?
Well, it's a question of what is the obligation to tell the truth, because I don't think there are no rules that you're living under in terms of contract. You haven't signed a contract with anybody, but I think the stock of the trade, the most useful approach to this thing is that teams need to be able to rely on players to disclose. There's no punishment other than you're seeing the punishment here. This guy didn't disclose and he plummets.
Well, he plummets not because he didn't disclose. He plummets because they're afraid now that he has an injury that might be impact on his ability to play.
Yeah, it's a little different. But I would always disclose. There's a risk. There's a risk, obviously. But I think you curry better favor with the teams if you've disclosed what is hopefully a minor problem.
Let me re-ask a question then.
Okay.
If Miles Jack or his constituency had disclosed the nature of his injury, would he have been a first-round draft choice anyway? Would some team have said, well, we'll take a chance with you anyway?
It really depends on the injury. If it was a beast of an injury,
the answer is no.
Yeah, he wouldn't get marks for honesty if he had a beast of an injury. He wouldn't say, oh, he's got a terrible injury. But he was a nice, honest guy.
See, I actually, when you look at last year's draft, as soon as you talked about this, the one guy who had a major, almost a catastrophic injury in the last college football season was Todd Gurley, who ended up going to the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody thought he would actually drop far lower than he did. I think he got taken 10th overall by the Rams, who said, we've looked at the medical reports, we've seen the x-rays, we've done medical tests on him, we think he can be back in it, and it's not going to be career-ending or career-restricting. So they actually probably if he was 100% healthy, he would not have been in the 10th spot.
Right. He would have been higher.
He would have been much higher.
Yeah.
And in the end, they got a bonus, and by the end of the season, he was their starting running back and is now going to be a star in the National Football League. So I think to Bob's point is, if you know enough ahead of time and you can actually go and look at the medical reports and be able to ascertain, you might have taken the chance on him in the first round if you felt that it wasn't going to be a debilitating injury, right?
Yeah, that's a key if.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's I don't know.
If your doctors can look and say, oh, don't worry about this, this is not a problem.
Yeah.
But if you get to the draft, if you get it, you go into your war room, and somebody gets the phone call an hour before the draft saying, by the way, Max got an issue and we don't know about it. It's not in any of our reports.
Right. It's not going to bode well for you.
No, you're scratching him off your list too.
Exactly.
Last point off the draft, Paxton Lynch, the quarterback out of Memphis, a client of Lee Steinberg, and Lee was on last week with us and, obviously propping his client up and hoping that he was a top 10 choice. And there were, again, I go back to the many, many draft previews that I read. There were previewers who said he would be a top 10 pick. One even said 8 to the Cleveland Browns. That he fell out of the top 10 was not surprising. That he fell to the Denver Broncos wasn't surprising either. There was no other quarterback taken, I don't think.
After the first two. No, he was the only one.
After the first two. He was the third that was taken. And he was taken by a team that clearly needs a quarterback. But he is not a guy, in my opinion. I was asked this earlier by a listener or viewer whether I thought he would play for Denver this year. And I said, no. I wouldn't. He'd have a clipboard in his hand for all 16 games. He would never get off the sideline.
Well, the interesting fact about Lynch was the Cowboys admitted after the draft they were trying to go and trade with Seattle too to get the pick rather than Denver getting the pick. So by the time it fell to that, you know, those last two or three picks of the first round, there was a lot of interest in him. Period.
I mean, look at it is so hard. Even if you're a high-level quarterback, and I don't think that this kid is, I think he's a prospect, but he's not a blue chipper. Even if you're a blue chipper, it's so hard to play your first year in the National Football League.
Absolutely.
You know, at the quarterback position, I mean, you can hide a lineman. You can live with their mistakes. Even a DB, you know, there's a whole bunch of positions where you can live with it.
But it can be career-ruining, Bob.
Of course it can. I mean, we've seen all kinds of guys killed because they played too soon.
I look at the New York Jets, and they've done it twice. Mark Sanchez and Geno Smith.
Yeah.
Forgotten Geno, yeah.
I mean, and those two kids who could, they, you know, one was at West Virginia and the other was from USC, and you thought, they're going to make it. They're going to be great players. They're going to do it. But they got thrown in too early, and now, I mean, Sanchez is on team what? And
he's on interestingly, he's at Denver and probably will be the starter now.
And Geno's still with the Jets, but no, they don't want to play him. And they just got too much too soon.
Well, it's always intriguing, and it will go on for the next couple of days as we get into rounds.
Actually, it'll end Labor Day, the draft.
84
draft
and 85.
That's right.
Yeah. Blue Jays are back in action tonight in Tampa, coming off the being swept by the Chicago White Sox. It's the first time they've been swept at home since September of 2013. The relevance of that is lost on me. But clearly...
It's research, Bob. It's research.
I don't know what that means. It wasn't the same 25 guys. It was maybe five of them. But nonetheless, they did get swept. They are three games under. You can't be happy with what they've done, but are you concerned with what you've seen? And those are kind of two different points of view. But I mean, are you worried?
I'm worried. I'm worried about the bullpen. I'm worried if the bullpen can get back to where it was, and have they reconstructed the bullpen that it has no possibility of getting to back to where it was when they were successful. I mean, their starting pitching's been pretty good, Bob.
I'm going to argue with you there too, because I'm going to say to you, bullpens never concern me. Bullpens are what bullpens are. If you don't like this guy, get another guy. And they're almost always easy to find.
Okay. But they
now you may never it may never get solved, but I'm never going to worry about the bullpen. That's my
ever.
You'll figure out something.
Then you better put
you won't.
Well, no, but then you better make your starters go eight innings rather than six.
Well, all right, that's a possibility. I'm more concerned about the offense on this team.
Gordon nods at everything, by the way. Just so
I'm just nodding.
He's like the bobblehead.
It's not at anything. I'm just nodding.
It's like the bobblehead in the front windshield of your car. You know,
that's right. I kind of worry about the. I mean, you know, not like I'm in the clubhouse or anything. It's from an outside perspective, but the mood and everything feels a little strange. Like the mojo is not there that they had. And he nodded again. That's good.
I got a hello.
You got a hello. Yeah.
But I didn't like and I don't know whether this is an unpopular opinion to say. And I just right from the get go with what Jose Bautista did, I haven't felt comfortable with it. And I'm not pinning on him at all, but it just felt like a weird way to start the year.
Do you think that impacted the club?
I don't know. I just kind of come up with something because it just feels
his
like
negotiation.
It's not, just come out and saying that. You sort of felt like, was that the right way?
Yeah, it's not the right way. It's not the right way to go.
Both of them.
Yeah.
Well, but it wasn't Edwin so much as his agent. It was Edwin's agent spoke for him.
It was just a trickle down. Jose. You know, there's that feeling like last year you heard a lot.
But there's a malaise.
How
there's
great
a...
this team is to play for. And you know, right now, because they're not playing well, you're not getting that sort of, I love these guys. You don't get that same...
No, well, I mean, the fact that, you know, a pitcher would walk off his bench because the guy blew his lead. Like, you like to see the spirit. You like the spirit. But when Cecil blew the lead the other night and the starting pitcher walked off the bench in obvious anger and stormed into the clubhouse, that's not the usual situation where you stay there and see the guy through no matter what, we're teammates, et cetera. And Josh Donaldson apparently has called out his teammates, and Tulowitzki doesn't look like the same guy. He could have taken third. He didn't take third. You know, his batting has been lackadaisical.
Well, this team has 9.4 strikeouts per nine innings. I think it's the second worst in all of baseball, but not by much. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're a power-hitting team. You expect some strikeouts, but the rate at which they're striking out is stunning.
Much greater than last year.
It's stunning. Their ability to score runs, to manufacture runs, is almost absent. I don't think anybody expected this team to score 5.5 runs a game again this year. But I've made this point earlier. Over the first 15 games, had they scored exactly 5.5 runs, the record would have been 13-2.
Yeah.
So, and again, you can't expect that. But it has been the absence of offense and the total absence of timely hitting. And not just timely hitting, they're not even putting the bat on the ball when they need to. I can't remember the last time, if at all year long, that somebody appeared to deliberately hit a ball to the opposite field in order to advance runners. That ball blows my mind. These are major league hitters. I understand there's major league pitchers out there. I know it's not that easy. But we have seen all kinds of guys historically that are capable of doing that. You may get out, but you advance the runner. This is not a team that's going to bunt. We get that. There's a couple of guys who may be able to bunt.
They're not bunting.
But they're not
bunting.
That's not part of their thought process. All right. But sometimes you got to put down the heavy lumber and just go the other way. I got runners on first and second with nobody out. I have one objective. It isn't a three-run jack. It's hit something to right field that I can move the runners up. And they are either unwilling to do that or entirely and completely incapable of doing that.
Which calls into question, and I hope the answer to this is no. But the question is, are there guys on the team who are negotiating perhaps the most important contract of their professional lives who feel they have to boom at the plate rather than just play good baseball?
You know the answer to that. You've represented athletes before. You've represented...
None of the athletes I represented ever...
Boomed?
Yeah,
boomed.
Sure.
No, that was not the right answer, John. Thanks for your help, though. No, of course players have the contract in mind. Now, having said that, if I were the Blue Jays, I certainly wouldn't sign them to a contract at this point. But it's affecting them.
If you're a 250 hitter with 10 home runs and you're looking for $30 million a year, guess what? You ain't getting it.
Yeah.
If you're a 250 hitter with 40 home runs, you got a shot.
This is a great chance to negotiate with your bats and with your glove rather than through your agent. That put on a show, show what you can do, show you're the team player.
Well, I understand that Jose Bautista going to right field with runners on first and second and nobody out, and this is a theory. This I don't know whether this has even occurred this year. It doesn't make you money.
Well, I'll tell you where it does. If you've got a guy like Shapiro who's been around a bit and he sees that, that's an impressive thing for a guy like to the fans. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Well, if you think Shapiro is going to give you $30 million a year, which I do not, I suppose it matters. At the end of when Jose Bautista's season is over and he goes through free agency, are they going to go back and look at the videotapes for the little idiosyncrasies? No, they're going to look at the stat sheet.
Yeah.
What did he hit? How many home runs did he hit? How many RBIs has he got? That's what they're going to look at.
Yeah.
you know,
and it's hard for the agent.
That ground ball to the second baseman that advanced the runner.
Yes.
Where's that on the stat sheet?
It's hard for the agent to point that out later in the season when you've got the stats in front of you. Well, and you say, yeah, but remember May 5th when I went the other way.
Well, and to do it once could be an accident, but if you did it 20 times over the course of the year, there's something that the agent would use.
Yes. And then it's also when the numbers are there and then they make plays like that, that's when everybody, like Donaldson last year, ball player.
Sure.
First thing you say, guy, this is why he's the MVP. Because he did
all this stuff.
Yeah, and the little plays that he made at third base.
But in fairness, I don't think you could criticize what he's done.
So no, not at all.
I know.
He struck out more.
The bigger point, those things that we talk about, advancing runners and doing the little things that might not get you the contract, but when you already have the contract and you have the numbers, everybody jumps on board when you do those things. That's what made Jeter. You know, those kind of things. I was a ball player doing everything that he, you know.
And he's the guy, the guys that aren't doing that. He's the guy who called out his teammates and who has the right to call out his teammates because he produces. Mm. He's 100% all the time on that field. It's unbelievable. And so he's the kind of guy that can inspire and motivate and tear a guy apart for not caring. But you look down through the ranks, you know. Although I like Carrera, though. I think he hasn't been through the league once.
Well,
so it's early. But
he's done a nice job.
He has done a nice job. Yeah.
I don't think anybody is thinking about him at this point as a potential starting outfielder.
I still think that there's some issues in the bullpen. I know that Bob doesn't.
Of course
think,
there are. I mean, there are.
When you look at Brett Cecil, who is off to another slow start, and then that, you know.
Cecil's been horrible. He's slow.
No, but the other thing was, in the offseason, how much was made out of the acquisition of Drew Storen? That this guy is going to solve the problem, you know, with Sanchez can move and become a starter. Storen's going to be that eighth inning guy or whatever, and he's going to help us soon. They don't even want to play him.
Yeah.
They don't even want him to pitch.
What does he make?
I don't have
eight.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
He would be in the
more. Area. I thought it was more than that.
Maybe it was ten.
Maybe 10.
But I mean,
I said repeatedly, I would never pay any reliever that kind of money.
Unless, of course. But if you're going to the way that John Gibbons manages this team, John pulls his starters out a lot quicker than some guys. Your middle relievers and your guys that are going to pitch the eighth and ninth inning, they have to deliver in order for this team to be successful.
Yes,
and you know what? They're not.
Yeah.
They're not doing that job. Forget about I know the bats aren't working, but they have to get through the second half of a game a lot more, and they're not doing that right now.
Well, we got to keep remembering, and I'm sure you—
Don't say it's early.
Well, I won't say it's early. I'll hearken back to the fact that they were 50 and 51 at one point last year.
Yeah, and if you think they're going to do what they did last year, this—
At the end, nobody's going to do that again.
That ain't happening again.
That's a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
You damn well better be better than 50 and 51, or you are not going to get into the postseason. And you were talking about Stroman's temper tantrums earlier. I mean, there's two things that are important. I'm here. On one hand, Stroman is a— he's a lit candle. He's a hand grenade ready to go off at any time. Yes. And I know of some situations off the field where he has conducted himself in a disrespectful manner. And I won't go any further than that.
But towards his teammates?
No, towards a fan.
Okay.
Who did nothing more than want to say hello to him.
Okay.
And
ain't right, but I'm more upset about him doing that to his teammates.
Well, but it's indicative of his personality.
How old is he?
24.
He's a kid.
I got news for you. You're playing Major League Baseball.
I know.
You've got a college degree. You spent 4 years at Duke. You ought to know better. I don't care how old you are. You ought to know better.
I totally agree with you, Bob, but you know what? Some people mature at 20. Some people mature at 30. Some people mature at 60.
Yeah.
Yep. And 24, most of the time, is not very maturable.
Well, his actions in the dugout the other day, which I'm sure were noticed by the other players on the team, he better fix that or they're going to turn on him.
So here's the other side, the other name that we haven't mentioned, and not that, you know, it's in a fairy world last year, but David Price. In terms of beyond being you know, among the best pitchers in the game, the presence that he brought. And you talk about that 50-51 was right around. I don't know the math. I know someone's out there going to tell me exactly when he came. But that was the turnaround. All, you know, Donaldson was there all year. And adding Tulowitzki. But David Price, the presence.
He was the anchor of all that.
And him being the lead guy that Stroman is now. And Price is the complete opposite of what we're describing as Stroman. From what we've seen, in terms of the way he handles himself.
When low profile.
Yeah. And in Boston the other day, he got lit up early. He stayed in the dugout. The team rallied. And he was there cheering him on. So there's a different. And that kind of thing, when you look at a guy like that, that's won awards and been the top pitcher for a long time. Again, use that phrase that we hear so much, the trickle down, but eventually you learn how to act and how to, you know, be a professional. And maybe that, you know, that's something to be said where, you know, that $30 million price tag, whether it been worth it, not only for getting what you get every 5 days out there, but the presence that he had even last year, the way they handled him in the playoffs.
Sure.
You know, most guys would have said, okay, yeah, you're not going to, you know, when they're talking about maybe not starting him and then they yank him. Or like, you felt like a lot of guys would say, really, what I've done for this team and who I am, you're going to do that? But he didn't take that road.
Right. So. Here's the downside. I don't know when the schedule gets easy, but next 20 games, 6 against the Rays, 7 against the Rangers, 3 against the Dodgers, 3 against the Giants.
Wow.
Then, in early May, you've got a series of how many?
19, between, I think. 19 games.
With the Red Sox and Yankees.
Yeah. And the 27 Yankees, too. That's going to be tough. Yeah. See, it doesn't get any easier.
Only Bob saw them.
As I recall, they were pretty good. Yeah. Well, I mean, there you go. Now, I don't think that necessarily means anything in baseball, to be honest with you. I think it means less than in other sports because what we know is great teams win 60% of their games and really bad teams win 40% of their games. So the difference between great and bad isn't that big in baseball. And that's based on history. It's not based on competitive balance or anything like that. It's year after year after year after year. You know, you win 100 games, you're a great team. You lose 100 games, you're a crummy team.
Yes.
But if you lose 100 games, you've won 62. It's, you know, that's pretty.
Makes you feel better that way.
Not that bad, really. You know.
Let's focus on the wins. That's right.
Yeah, we had we had 100 bad days, but we had 62 good ones. So, you know.
Gordis, I've told you many times, Bob is always a cup half full type of guy.
Yeah.
Except when I'm sitting near you, and then I look over, and the full cup is empty. Like
right now.
Like now, look. Yeah, right. 28 before the hour, we'll take the break. Come back with the final segment of the program. I know you're thankful. It's primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
There's been a lot of Raptor talk on all the other Sportsnet channels, and since we're not on Sportsnet anymore, I guess that's irrelevant, but we might as well talk about the Raptors for the last 10 or 12 minutes. It won't be their last game of the season under any circumstance. They can lose and still have a game 7, which would be on Sunday, I believe, back here. But I don't think they want to go to a game 7. I don't know any team that goes into game 6 leading 3-2 and wants to take the chance on a game 7 because, as we have all found out, regardless the sport, you kind of throw all the stats out, and anything can happen in a game 7. And I'll be honest with you, and I said this earlier, I have no feel for what to expect tonight.
I agree. Yeah, I think it's been that way the whole series.
You don't think they're over the hump with the fourth quarter?
No,
I think they are. I think they're facing a team that's not a good home team. They've got a real chance to win in the other team's court. And
I don't have that
and their
feeling
best player,
at all.
Their best player hasn't been playing well at home.
Well, Indiana kicked the snot out of them in the last game at Indiana.
Yeah, Paul George is pretty good in game four, Gordon. But
he's the best player in the game, in the series.
In the series, no question.
I mean, by a long shot.
He's not playing well at home. We'll see.
Well, I think the statistics would suggest otherwise. But, you know, either way, there's no doubt in, I don't think, anybody's mind. I mean, Brad said he agreed with me that he doesn't have a feel for this series. If the Raptors play to their potential, which they haven't come close to doing, they win this game easily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The question is, can they find that thing, that it factor, that the thing that makes you a $28 million a year player, the thing that makes you a franchise guy, the thing that creates success? It, to do it during the regular season is certainly an achievement. But their two principal scorers, Lowry and DeRozan, have both overall underperformed.
Yeah.
And how do we know what they're going to do?
It all started with game one. Just changed the whole psyche. If they come in and win that comfortably like they should have, then they feel like, yep, okay, this is a different team. We're through. And right when you lose game one at home in any series, it always seems like you got to go. Obviously, they've gone at least six, but a lot of times you end up going seven. But just change the confidence, because everyone said this is different. 56 wins. I mean, that's a good. So, you know, teams that we watched in the 80s were winning NBA championships with 56 wins. So it's, it's going to be very interesting. But the door is open for a deep run when you consider what's waiting in the next round. If they get take care of this one as early as they can, being tonight, this is an opportunity where it's a weird year and the injuries going on in the West, you never know.
See, I when you look at Indy, when you look at how the Pacers play the game, and we know how good Paul George is. To me, it's Monte Ellis and George Hill that are going to be the two guys. If those two guys are able to put some level of a game together, then the Raptors might be in trouble.
Offensively?
Yes, offensively. And Monte Ellis was an absolute, when the game here the other night, I mean, he was awful.
Yeah.
And if you read the Indy papers and read and listen to Indianapolis sports talk radio, they're ripping them to shreds. Not Paul George, but everybody else not carrying their weight. So I would expect that those guys, the second-tier players on the Pacers, are going to decide how the game is won tonight. And if Ellis and Hill can do what they're supposed to do.
But don't you think, John, if the Raptors stars, and we know who they are, just do what they've done most of the year, score 20, 20-plus, the Raptors win comfortably tonight.
They should,
yes,
Bob.
They should. It doesn't
matter what Indiana throws at them. The Raptors are a better team with better talent. That all they got to do is perform.
But
and they haven't.
Well, you know, I forget who we had on earlier this week. Got ended up talking about this. Officiating's different in the NBA playoffs.
I understand that.
It's a lot tougher. DeRozan is not getting the calls that he got in the second half of the season. He's not getting those now. So that becomes an issue now. 34 points the other night, maybe that changes everything, and we're going to see DeRozan from the regular season tonight.
But Lowry has not scored once in this. It hasn't hit 20, I don't think, at any point in this series. And his threes, he's throwing them up, but they're not going down.
Yeah, they play small. The fourth quarter to me was they played small ball, and it worked.
Well, that's the key, though. The fourth quarter, how much will Dwayne Casey want to use that lineup used in the fourth quarter? It's sort of a miracle thing.
What would you do?
Well, that's tough. It's the old lightning in a bottle, right? And now it's sort of, is this a time to experiment? Think, can they do it again? Because then you're leaving a lot of guys that you have a lot of faith in on the bench. And
I just think that they
can't start
the
Powell, though.
No, you cannot start him. But that small ball worked, and the high pick and roll to Valanciunas worked.
Yeah.
Those aren't things they do a lot in the regular season.
No.
And you know what? Those two things are going to work again if they do it properly. If they stick to the old-fashioned game plan, they won't win. Mm-hmm. They won't win. He has to learn to adapt more. You know, I think that's something that's important for Casey.
And maybe that was the coming out party in that regard. Well, fourth quarter, a lot of guts to do what he did.
They had nothing to lose.
But I guess at that point you're down 13 or whatever they were.
And,
yeah.
See, the thing with me too is if you try and look ahead, which is obviously dangerous with this Raptors team, the way they have played, regardless what happens tonight. Not only do I not have any confidence in them tonight, I'm not saying they're going to lose, I just don't know.
No.
I would have no confidence in the next round either. They haven't. They've sporadically played well, but then
you don't
sporadically
know who's
played
up.
Horribly in this series. And I don't even know if Charlotte or is it Charlotte or Miami? Are those the two?
They're going to play there. Yeah,
I don't know whether Charlotte or Miami is a tougher opponent. I would assume they will be.
I think so, but the problem is that you have no comfort level as to what team is going to show up, as to what the nature of the team is, because you can be expecting one Raptors team and a different team shows up, different performance level entirely. And I don't know, I mean, certainly as a fan, I don't have any explanation for it. And maybe hopefully the coaching staff does, but you just don't know what you're getting. So when you talk looking forward to the next round, which I think there will be, knock on wood, but if you look forward to the next round, you don't know which Raptors team's going to show up at the arena. No.
Well, it also creates an interesting situation going to the off season. At the beginning of the year, we sort of, at least my position was, and I think most people concurred, if they lose in the first round, they're going to tear this team apart. If they lose in the second round, it's a tough call. It could go either way. If they get to the third round, you've essentially proven that this nucleus can accomplish things. Do you feel the same way after five games of this series? Do you still think it's, the same kind of math? Is Masai Ujiri looking at this thing right now and still thinking, well, I'll wait and see how they do?
Has he
already decided, I'm not going to go through another year with this group?
I think that they have the ability next year to spend lots of money. I think they spend it. Not necessarily on guys on this roster. I mean, I'd like to see them go to the free agent world and go and try to make a way to improve this club.
Would you resign DeRozan?
I don't know enough about NBA budgeting.
Yeah, what cost? That's the whole key.
But do you sit there, and everybody talks about the max money, and you know darn well someone out there, there's going to be desperation on an NBA team, insert their name Lakers here, they're going to pay him the max money.
That's right. You're going to have to pay max to get him.
So
keep him, rather.
To keep him. Do you, you'd have to find a way. If there's other ways to replace what he gives you, then maybe you don't. But and that's a question that your jury knows that I don't know. Masai knows exactly whether there's guys that he can replace DeRozan with. But
I'm going to correct myself here. I got to assume the LA Lakers are seeing the exact same games that we're seeing. I wonder if they feel as comfortable with DeMar DeRozan as the savior of their franchise, the replacement for Kobe, the guy that can lead them back to the promised land. Do they still feel that way? I mean, I don't know that they ever did, but...
Right. You don't know if they ever did, and you also don't know. I mean, they are so far under the cap that they could have three guys, with the way things are going. It's a tough question. Do you take all the time and money you've invested in building this guy and just see it walk out the door? Do you?
Well, probably the next X amount of games is going to decide that.
Yeah.
What he does. It's funny, but people talked about the depth at the start of this year saying this is a different Raptor team than last year and they have more depth and everything else. But I've always been of the impression in the NBA more than anything, the depth is great, but it's your stars that win it. And all the great teams we watch, the Celtics, the Lakers, the Pistons, the Bulls, you name two, three guys. Nobody goes, they're so good when the eighth and ninth man come, off the bench. That helps when there's injuries and that, but your studs got to be the guys, and that's who we're talking about, DeRozan and Lowry, right? And they haven't been, collectively, as Bob said. Great DeRozan the other night, hopefully for Raptor fans, that's the start of it. But that, to me, is the key, because long-term, you need those guys to dominate every night. And the good teams, that's what happens in the playoffs.
Well, we're going to get an idea in a few minutes, a few hours, I guess, before we know the result. And it's the NBA, after all. Tune in for the last 2 minutes, and you'll find out what happened.
Bob, some of us love basketball.
Last 2 minutes, which will take a half an hour with the 20 timeouts.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I will watch from beginning to end. I watch basketball from the beginning of the game to the end of the game. But I do understand, and game five was the exact same situation. You cannot predict how the thing is going to end. If you're not going to watch anything other than 2 minutes, watch the last 2 minutes. Because as often as not, all the drama that you could want will come right there. Music's playing. We got to get out of here. Have yourselves a nice weekend. Enjoy the basketball game. Enjoy baseball this weekend in Tampa. Enjoy the draft lottery show that will last 18 minutes. Be the greatest waste of time you've ever
draft lottery
committed to. For Shannon, Kirk, and Faye McCowan, good night from Toronto.